Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is This Week in Radio Tech, episode 106, recorded November 9th, 2011. Duck Farts. This episode of This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Omnia Audio and the new Omnia 11. Big market radio engineers are calling it effortlessly loud. Check it out at omniaaudio.com. It's time for This Week in Radio Tech. Hello there, I'm Kirk Harnack. So glad that you joined us. This is the show where we talk about radio and audio technology, all things RF and how we take care of radio stations. We talk about, you know, getting the message out to the public, which radio is still a huge way to get that done. And it doesn't look like it's going away anytime soon, despite all the things that are supposed to kill the radio star. And so a couple of gentlemen are with me, joining me to help keep the radio star alive. Let's check out the best dressed engineer in radio. It's Chris Tobin from Manhattan. Hey, Chris. Hello, Chris.
Here we go. Sorry about that.
Oh, there you are.
Yes, the rumors of the radio demise are false at this time. We've
That's
got at least
right.
another 10 years to go.
How are you, Chris, and what's your expertise? Why are you here?
I'm here because I like to help you out. No. I'm 20 years plus doing radio engineering for AM FM stations and a couple of radio networks as well. And most recently now taking on the job of manufacturing audio codecs and video codecs for the broadcast and TV radio industry. And that's CCS Musicam. And I'm still working with radio stations here in town, New York City, and a couple of outside the city. So I'm still involved with the radio folks, and it's a lot of fun. So I've changed, did the old hat change. Now I'm on the other side of the fence, so it's fun.
Well, good deal. Well, it's interesting that you still have your hands in radio engineering, as do I. I work full-time for Telos, Omni, and Axie and have for 11 years now. But still, I do radio engineering work sometime in American Samoa and sometimes in Mississippi, which sometimes seems farther away than American Samoa, and do a little extra consulting on the side. So, hey, also with us, Tom Ray from New York City, from the Hudson Valley of New York, chief engineer for WOR. Hello, Tom.
Hello, Kirk, and VP of Engineering at Buckley Broadcasting. I'm actually very happy that you didn't say, thank God he's dressed engineer.
Yes.
But anyway, yeah, no, so I'm up here in the Hudson Valley. Last week we had snow. This week we don't. So, you know, I'm a happy camper. It's been in the 60s, so.
All right. Well, good to have you along, too. We're on this episode, we're recording this on Wednesday, November the 9th. And today for us was the day of the National EAS test and the EAN, Emergency Action Notification Demonstration. And it didn't go off as well as planned, but it sure does point out problems with the system. So we're going to talk about that a bit. A word from other broadcast owners here to pass along to you. I've got two of our guests right here who experienced the test in the Big Apple in New York City. And also, Tom Ray, you've got stations in other places around the country that reported some interesting things as well. The idea behind this test, well, tell you what, Chris Tobin, why don't you tell us the idea behind this test and what was it supposed to show, not show, prove, or not prove?
Well, the principle, the overview of the test was to allow federal government level, you know, the executive branch of the federal government, the office, the White House, the president, to be able to reach basically the citizens of the United States, you know, all at once, so to speak, across all media. It's AM, FM, television, and I believe satellite delivered TV as well, DirecTV, those guys. And the idea was to have a one single point of entry. And then from there, it would just cascade, if you will, or relay out to radio and TV across the country. So today's test was to bore out how well that works, the systems in place, if they make sense, if the proper relay time, you know, think about it. If you're playing the game of telephone with 20 people in a room and you're trying to say hello at one end of the room, and by the time it reaches the other end of the room, it's about, what, 10 seconds later. Think of it as from the White House to everybody in America, there's going to be a slight delay. So the idea behind the test was multifaceted to determine where we make changes, time and you know, delivery and the audio quality and what's going to be said. And that's basically what today's test was to bear out. It was not to penalize anybody, not to pass judgment. You know, it's like a brainstorming session. It was basically, we're going to give it a try. It's never been done before, even though we've had other emergency broadcast systems in place since the 50s. It's never been done in this level. So it was all about just finding out what will happen. And we found a lot of good things and a few things that definitely need improvement.
Yeah. Well, Tom, you made a recording, apparently, of what happened on WOR today. Is that right?
Yes, I did. Actually, that's from our documentary. We record everything on the air. And it was interesting to the audio. I mean, as far as the execution of the test, everything went properly. We lost one of our LP1s in New York. We have five LP1s in New York City. Most cities are lucky to have one, maybe two. We have five just because of the buildings and the way the signals propagate down in Manhattan. So we need five to actually cover the whole city. And we lost one of them, but because, of course, the way all the LP1s are daisy-chained one after the other and monitoring other sources and listening, one listens to one guy, one listens to another guy, the whole thing went off exactly as it was supposed to go, with the exception of the audio, which was horrendous.
Yeah. Well, tell you what, Tom, set up this story here. We have this story from Radio World Online, rwonline.com. The story by Leslie Stimson, EAS test reveals problems, successes. And there's some audio here. There's a player built onto the webpage. What are we going to hear when we do play this cut? And I'll give a warning before we play this cut. So what are we hearing, Tom?
Well, what it does, Kirk, it picks up right when the EAN actually came into WOR. The way we are configured, the way WOR gets it, WABC is our PEP station. Now, PEP station is a primary entry point. That's where the message from the government comes in. Happens to be WABC. It went to WCBS-AM, which immediately forwarded over. WOR got it. Bang, we immediately kicked in. So what you're hearing is when our box kicked in, you'll hear our EAS data bursts. You'll hear our two-tone. Then it picks up with two-tone from WCBS and the rest of the audio. And once you hear the audio, you'll understand why I say it was horrendous. After that, there's the end of message data bursts. And then following that, we issued on our own a required weekly test as soon as the national test was over in case somebody downstream that monitors WOR locked up, this would unlock them because that would definitely issue a clean EOM. So,
all right. Now, so we're going to play this audio, and I want to point out, please don't ever play this on your radio station. This would be not good. But playing it here on the internet, on the interwebs, on your computer, okay, it's just fine. But these duck farts that you're about to hear, that means something. And it would mean something to a bunch of decoders. So don't play this on a radio station. Go ahead.
The nationwide live code test of emergency alert system capabilities. This test message has been initiated by National Alert and Warning Authorities in coordination with emergency alert system participants, including broadcast, cable, satellite, and wireline participants in your area. Had this been an actual emergency, the attention signal you just heard would have been followed by emergency information, news, or instruction. This is only a test. We now return you to regular programming.
Whoop, where's our ending tones?
maybe Burke cut them off. But there were three sets of ending tones. They weren't all quiet. There we go. There's some of them.
Yeah. Sorry I did.
That's okay. This is the weekly. Done.
Is that all of it? Yeah. Okay.
That's it.
All right, Tom, can you, okay, what we heard there, we heard the beginning tones, and were those the correct tones for this EAN?
Yes, those were the tones that were actually generated by WOR's EAS box.
Okay, so you, and those were generated locally. That's why they were so clear. And then there was the old two-tone EBS thing, and that is still part of this whole system. Why? Is that to unlock old decoders that schools have, for example?
Yes, those would unlock the older decoder. It'll actually unlock the newer decoder because the CAP service is not in place yet.
Yeah.
Excuse the dog barking in the background if you can hear it. I don't know what's going on upstairs, but he's driving himself nuts. Once that happens, once those first three bursts come in, that tells that's where the information is contained, that this is an EAN, an emergency alert notification message. The box looks at that code, says, okay, it's an EAN. What do I do? Oh, okay, it's an EAN. I've got to forward this immediately. It then issues our tones and starts the process to bring in whichever source it captured first. In this case, it was WCBS AM.
Okay.
Is your
decoder there at WOR receiving this message from more than one place at approximately the same time?
We monitor WCBS. We also monitor WNYC FM. NYC monitors the LP1 that failed and us. So they went after our tones went. Instead of normally they probably would have picked it up from the other LP1 first, and well, they didn't. So
okay,
and then the message goes, and at the end of the message, and we'll talk about the message in a second. At the end of the message, they issue the three EOM or end of message tones. That signals the box, okay, test is finished. Issue the EOM, release everything. You're done.
Yeah,
And then what Burke brought up is at the end of this, just in case a box locked up, if for whatever reason the national EOM didn't go, okay, we issued a weekly test, which is just the first three data bursts that identifies it as a weekly test that does not, unless your box is set up to automatically take it to air, it'll just log it, and then we issue the EOM at the end of that. The message itself. In our facility, WCBS is normally a little bit noisy. It's not that noisy. I don't know where that came from. Because we were listening to it in the master control room, and I listened to it and said, that's what I'm hearing is definitely arable. Before the test hit, and when the test hit, it's like all get out broke loose. I've got an audio cut that I received from one of our stations in California. It sounded similar.
Yeah.
I've got an audio cut I've received from a couple of stations. Well, our stations in Connecticut sounded similar. A friend of mine in Massachusetts sent us an audio cut. Sounds similar. So this didn't happen in New York. The distortion, the noise, the duplication, that you hear what I'm going to refer to as looping because it sounds like a tape loop. That happened someplace, and I'm guessing it had to happen wherever the origination point is because I'm told by a couple of PEP stations that that's the way they received it.
So that they received audio on top of audio.
Right. And where that's generated, there's a couple of, oh, not a couple, there's one box out there, I'm not going to mention the brand, that... if you hit it too hard on the front end with the audio, when you put the audio into it, it will generate that effect. So basically, you don't hammer digital zero. You don't put a signal in and take it full scale. It does have metering on it. You ride the metering about halfway. It works. Someplace, my guess is someplace this was overdriven. I can't tell you where. I don't know. I know where I got it from, and I know where they got it from, and from that point on, I don't know where it came from or how it got there. So,
I tell you, in hearing that and in hearing your description, Tom, and knowing what I know about about how the system is supposed to work. One thing that just frustrates the hell out of me is that this was a great system for 1956.
Yep.
And what have we done to improve it? Well, we've got these duck fart tones, which, hey, people in the chat room are kind of asking about these duck fart tones. They actually are pretty smart tones. Are these the same thing as same codes, or is there a different word for these actual duck farts?
Well, the same code is actually the what identifies it as a required weekly test or as an emergency action notification. But what this is, what you're hearing is a 9600 baud data stream.
Okay. And it's supposed to work even over rough audio connections, like a station that's monitoring an AM station 50 miles away. As long as the audio, or works over a phone line, supposed to work over a phone line. In reality, it may not work over a phone line, depending on the phone line. But it's supposed to work through the vagaries of the public switch telephone network. And I can tell you that it doesn't always. But that it's supposed to be very, very robust. It can be received and retransmitted and still be okay, supposedly. Now, we heard the announcer's audio over another, the EBS dual tone, that really irritating, tone that's supposed to really wake you up. And the reason they use that dual tone, for years and years with the old EBS system is because those are two tones that would never occur in any song because they're so tonally unrelated to each other. So you're not going to get false positives from a decoder listening for that tone because you can't stand to hear it very long. So we heard audio over audio, impressed over audio. And Tom, you're saying this because somewhere up in the chain, maybe at FEMA, maybe at PEP stations, I'm not sure, we're not sure yet, but some decoder got hit with a level that was way too hot. And
that's what I'm guessing, because this is a known issue with this particular box. And they put out a service bulletin out on it, and they said until they actually find a quote-unquote real fix, the fix right now is back down the audio level, which makes sense. I mean if you feed it properly, you garbage in, garbage out theory. And if it's fed properly. Now, I can tell you that the last time we had a monthly test in New York City that was originated over at the Office of Emergency Management, that we actually carried the entire message straight through from WCBS, and it didn't sound anything like that. It just aired fine, and everything was proper.
Yeah.
It wasn't them. It definitely wasn't them. It definitely wasn't us. So.
But by the way, chat room, somebody thought that long tone was 1050 hertz. No, it's not. 1050 hertz is a tone that has been used by the NOAA weather radios to unlock their receivers. The old EBS tones were 853 and 960 hertz. Tonally very unrelated. Yeah, pretty nasty sounding when played together. 853 and 960. And again, they're still used, as we mentioned earlier, because there are plenty of old EBS receivers at various places, prisons and schools, and I'm sure hospitals. They'd have to replace them with new receivers, although thank goodness new receivers are, $30 at Kroger or Walmart or Target. But these old receivers pick up those two tones for about 4, 5, 6 seconds, and then they unmute and let you hear whatever the audio is. So part of the current EAS structure is to still transmit those tones after the duck fart tones that give some indication as to what kind of message is coming down the pike. Sorry, guys. I'm just kind of disgusted and embarrassed about the way this came off. It sounds like a lot of radio stations retransmitted a lot of bad audio that nobody's quite sure where it came from, but it kind of looks like it came from FEMA. Which is where the whole thing started.
I got to tell you, when the audio hit air, we were standing around the master control room looking at each other going, where the hell is this coming from? That's when I listened to what was coming in, and what you heard is what was coming into us. And it was like, well, nothing I can do about it, we pride our, and granted we're an AM radio station, we pride ourselves in sounding good. It is what it is. But on the other hand, the good news is that at least at the LP1 stations and several that I know that are downstream from the LP1s in New York City, everything reacted the way it was supposed to. The box saw the EAN message. It seized air. It retransmitted what it was supposed to. It released when it saw the EOM. And that actually is probably 80% of what this test is, to make sure that the mechanical, or not the mechanical, but the electrical mechanical part actually does what it's supposed to. You know, the mechanics happen. After that, now we got to figure out what happened with the audio and make sure that doesn't happen again. So knowing it came in, that it came in that way, okay, well, it's really going to be somebody else's problem to make sure that doesn't happen again, and somebody else's problem to look at, which makes me happy because I got enough to do.
Now I do understand that all of the PEP stations were fed by a phone system of a whole bunch of hybrids, 60 or 70 telephone hybrids that work through the public switch telephone network, and of course at the other, you know, who knows what that might be at the other end. It could be on a VoIP line. It could go through a number of conversions before it ends up getting where it's going. Hey, I'm part owner of some radio stations in American Samoa, and the only way to get audio out there right now from FEMA is via a phone connection, and it either goes via satellite or via undersea fiber, which American Samoa just got the undersea fiber a couple of years ago. And a representative from FEMA was out there at our radio stations a week or so ago getting this tested, and they worked for 3 hours and they could barely get a test to work. And it was because of, they figured, because of frequency shifts that were going on with the public switch telephone system. Not that that's a big public entity. You know, it's one private company hooked to another, hooked to another, hooked to another. And bottom line was there was very little chance of it working at our stations in American Samoa, and it didn't work in American Samoa. The phone line connected. The duck farts came in, but they were not decoded, and so no test was retransmitted on our stations there.
What's interesting, Kirk, is that with this audio daisy chain that we used for this test, and there is a digital portion of these boxes that's not in service yet. On this audio daisy chain, if I'm not mistaken, I believe it was Oregon, I've seen reports that. The PEP station, there's one in Oregon, and I'll give you my opinion on that in a minute. Something happened and it locked up. I don't know if their codec locked up or what happened, but nobody in the state of Oregon received or ran the test. Now that's pretty scary. That brings me to the PEP, because they usually assign a PEP station to like one given geographical area or one state.
Right.
Well, why don't they have more? Because you're looking at one single point of failure.
Yeah.
For a whole state. And if there's a nuclear bomb coming towards my state, I want to know about it.
I heard from a station owner today that Oregon, Georgia, Minnesota, all those states basically had no test today. This is secondhand. But that's from a station owner who said he was in touch with other station owners in other states. As I said, in American Samoa, we had 30 seconds of dead air, no audio. In many stations in Ohio, they had 30 seconds of what sounded like white noise. And someone thought, well, maybe that was just AGC sucking up whatever line noise may have been there. Well, maybe, but most radio stations, most audio processors nowadays, doesn't matter what brand they are, you know, they do gating. And so they don't reach way down and suck up noise. Now, if the noise is only 10 dB down to start with, then sure, it might suck that up. But things should be a little quieter than that. I really believe that, and I was in touch with someone today who's in a position to know something about this, and it's possible that we'll have somebody on the show within a couple of weeks to maybe describe what seems to have gone wrong and how they can correct it. But right now, the whole thing is distributed over the public switch telephone network, and they really the engineers involved at the federal level would really like to move this to something else, or something else in addition to the phone connections. And of course, satellite would be a pretty good, pretty reliable way to do it. There's things that can happen with any connection scheme, satellite is certainly one way to do it. I can tell you what would happen if there were a national emergency and stations found out about it, either through a system like this, which didn't work today as far as the audio, did work as far as getting the tone burst out, at least to a large extent. They would put their national news network on the air, to which they're connected via satellite now anyway. So at my little stations in Mississippi, or in Mississippi, we'd put Fox News or ABC News or CBS News. We're affiliates of all those at various places. We'd put those just directly on the air and take whatever live coverage that they had. And believe me, it'd be beautiful digital quality. Out in American Samoa, we can't get any of those satellite services live. Actually, I guess we're talking about this for a second. In American Samoa, which is almost near the international dateline, from that location, you can see, not with your eyes, of course, but you can see, what's the name of this, of the bird that everybody's pointing at in the radio business? It slips, it's changed name so many times.
AMC-8.
AMC-8,
that's it. We could see AMC-8 clearly from American Samoa. The problem is AMC-8 is not pointing at us. AMC-8 has directional antennas, as most of these birds do, and they're pointing at, there's a spot beam at Alaska, and the rest of it points to the continental U.S. with maybe just enough over Florida and just enough to hit Puerto Rico. So we pointed a 32-foot dish at AMC-8. And on the spectrum analyzer, we got about 1 dB of carrier the noise. It was just terrible. So anyway, in American Samoa, we can't get live network news from the usual means. So there we delay it spot beam on Hawaii too. We get it by FTP. We record it in Mississippi and put it on FTP server right away, and it goes out to Samoa within the next few minutes, and we play news out there that's just 5-6 minutes old. But anyhow, I digress. My point there really was, it's tough to get the same audio everywhere, especially if it's a system that only is going to be used, what, once in your lifetime? You know, it's not used for commercial purposes every day. You know, this actually, you know, we in broadcast, whether you work for an NPR station or an affiliate of one of the national news networks or a news talk station, think about how reliable your audio feeds are every minute of every day. And yet, we have a system here where, I mean, to put a point on it, FEMA can't get a message out from D.C. to all the radio stations, or to the 67 PEP stations across the country that sounds decent and is reliable and understandable. But it's the first time we've done it. You know, there's reasons why it didn't happen. And now I guess they have data to take back and say, look, if you're serious about this, U.S. government, if you're serious about getting audio out to all these radio stations and audio to TV stations, we're going to have to do something different. So if you want to do it, let's do it. All right, I've blabbed on quite a while. Mr. Tobin, you've been quiet for a while. Why don't you tell us your opinion?
I couldn't agree more. Actually, I would be embarrassed as you are if I was anywhere near the Beltway with this whole principle before the test took place. If you're going to connect your primary entry points, the PEPs, with public switch telephone network connectivities, you got to consider the problems that brings you. There are plenty of ways of getting reliable, we'll call it a connection, to the PEPs, and from there they can relay to their respective regions through the normal means. I remember years and years ago that the networks used to have, I believe, the major networks had connectivity back to the White House, or at least to the to FEMA type of facility, so that, sure, if there was an emergency, going out, it would make it to the networks. They would distribute accordingly to wherever it had to go for the stations at the time that were being covered. If you weren't covered by a network, you got it through the other local means of EBS and whatnot. You know, I don't think anybody's really taken a serious look at this in a proper manner. I think this has become more of just like, well, it's on the books, is what we got to do, and people are just in lockstep going through the motions. Because if you really are in emergency management design and understanding, you would know that this system is going to have a problem. Yes, the electromechanical connectivity from point A to point, multi-points, A, B, C, all the way through, made its way out. And we got to hear the audio that was probably reminiscent of something you'd recall back in maybe 1926 when the spark gap transmitters were in fashion. But, it shouldn't have sounded that way. You know, double audio, fine, but it should have been much clearer. And these are things we have to really think about. And you're right. if FEMA is serious about this, or whatever administration within the different government agencies that do this stuff are serious, the first thing to do is from point A, FEMA, we'll just call it from, you know, FEMA A, to the PEPs has to be thought about, and you know, the best way to do it. And maybe it's more than one method, satellite, maybe a combination, maybe a hybrid method. And then the second thing, as Tom pointed out, is your PEPs in the states, you need more than one in a region, then so be it. You know, if Oregon has only one for the state, somebody should sit there and go, that's a problem. Because that falls under what they, you know, the term is called life safety. It's like when you're in a building, people say, don't take the elevator. Why? You jeopardize the situation, the safety of your life. So why would a PEP, which is going to be the life safety connection, only be one of them? You've got a point of failure that's just, you know, catastrophic. So, you know, it really requires some thought. Yeah, the test now officially bores out, oh, look, the deficiencies we have. Now the question is, will the rubber meet the road and people willing to actually do something with it? Which goes back to what I said several episodes way back. EAS needs to be taken more seriously as a program element. Otherwise, none of this will ever come to fruition the way it should. That's why we have what we had today.
In the chat room, Web 5466 says, let CNN do it. And you know, I tell you what, I don't know about rural areas, but if you're in any kind of an urban area, whether it's an airport or even a bus station or a barber shop, there's CNN, or a hotel lobby or a bar. Put it on ESPN. You'll hit all the sports bars in the country.
Well, today's test was to do that.
Yeah.
That was the point behind the today's test.
Okay,
TV
yeah,
as
okay
well as,
I get your point. Yes, was to put it on all the sports bars in the country and all the networks.
My pet peeve, my concern is from the organizational side and saying, hey, if you're going to do an emergency preparedness plan, then think about it. What am I, you know, think of it, you know, if this was like a military, if this was the military doing a, you know, a something, first thing they think about is they go, okay, how do we get in? What's the mission? You know, what do we do to get the job done? And how do we get out with, you know, minimal losses? Same thing here. Hey, guess what? The guy in that office down the hall, the Oval Office, needs to make an announcement to several hundred million people. Okay, how is he going to do it? And what's the best way we can make it happen? Well, maybe he's not in the office the day the announcement has to be made. So what method are you going to use to get that audio from where he's located back to the feed point, which then goes out to everybody else? These are things that I've never heard anyone really talk about or discuss that's been, you know, bantered about. And then the next thing to consider is there are technologies available today that you don't have to be audible, okay? Here's the stigma. Yeah. You got the duck farts, as we've been calling them, that go out on the radio. Well, anybody who's, you know, worth their weight as a programmer, radio programmer, you know, even TV, knows that's like a turnoff. People are just going to ignore it. So why not take the technology similar to what, say, the PPM, the personal people meter, uses, and maybe use that as a method of encoding and decoding, and then the alerts go out in a nice, proper manner. So when that, you know, when somebody comes on and says, this is a test, people aren't jumping away because those duck farts have come out. Remember, PPM could be done over the telephone because that's how the Arbitron tests your setup.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Yes.
That's true.
These are things to consider, and what needs to be talked about.
Tell you what, after we hear from our sponsor, let's talk about how CAP affects this and how today's test could have, would have, should have been different if CAP were implemented across all the radio stations at this point. Does that sound like a good thing to talk about?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Folks, this program, This Week in Radio Tech, where today we're talking about a subject that I just don't like to talk about, but it feels like we need to. It's just hard for me to get a clear view of how this can really, really work well. And it just depends on so many people, so many things happening right. And, I'll go off on some kind of rant before the show is over. Hey, our show is brought to you by two of my three employer brands. I want to tell you for just a minute about Omnia Audio. There, if you check out the Omnia Audio website, maybe we can get Burke. I should have given you some heads up. If you go to omniaaudio.com, you're going to find on the front page of that website a counter. It's counting down. Oh, my goodness. Look, it's down to 2 days 1 hour, 45 minutes, and 27 seconds as we record and transmit this show, This Week in Radio Tech. And that's counting down to, we're commemorating the Omni 11 and the date, 11-11-11. You know, I've been noticing that a number of different brands have been doing something about this interesting date, 11-11-11. Won't happen again for another 100 years, I suppose. But we're offering the Omni 11 for $11,111.11, if you haven't guessed that by now. You can phone or call or email or get to the website of your favorite Omnia dealer anywhere in the world. Doesn't matter what country you're in. And the price is the same. It's in U.S. dollars, $11,111.11. I don't think you'll ever see this kind of price, this low price available again on the Omnia 11. It is, I tell you what, this thing is just flying out the door. We actually cannot keep up with the orders at Omnia. If you order one today, it very well may be a month before you get your Omnia 11. Get your dealer to order you one, though, and you're going to be very happy with the on-air sound. It's clean. It's clear. The Intermod distortion that you've just been so used to hearing with FM processing all your life is just gone. And every time you hear a song, you think, my goodness, is that a new mix? It just sounds so different and clean and clear. And yet it prints on the air just as loud as any other radio station. The clarity is just incredible. Check it out at omniaaudio.com. Now, the other thing I want to mention, and I mentioned this earlier in the show, is this interesting news that we just got today about one of our partners, and that is at Axxia. Axxia, the inventor of LiveWire, which is a collection of standard IP protocols, but we've put them together in such a way that we can actually transmit high quality, unbuffered, linear audio over a standard IP network using good quality, multicast capable Ethernet switches. So I just want to tell you about this partnership that the folks at Studer, it's a Harman company, but very, very familiar to broadcasters. Studer, one of Pro Audio and Broadcasting's best known brands, is the latest technology company to adopt the Axxia LiveWire AOIP standard. LiveWire is the broadcast networking system that utilizes Ethernet to provide an easy way to route and share audio and logic through the broadcast plant. And under the LiveWire Limitless license introduced this year, Studer is licensed to build LiveWire interfaces into any or all of its products, allowing instant one cable connection to Axxia networks and products for more than 30 other LiveWire hardware and software partners. So there's a press release that's gone out on this, and we'll probably have it on the Axxia website tomorrow or the next day. But anyway, I want to welcome Studer to the Axxia family as yet another LiveWire partner. And I sure appreciate those folks very much. You know, Studer had a facility right here in Nashville for years. They had a parts depot and a repair depot here. And in fact, back in the 1980s, I even visited that place to buy some parts to repair an A70, or maybe it was a B77, but a reel-to-reel machine. So they've been around a long time, and their consoles are extraordinarily popular in other countries around the world. Not so much here in the U.S., but in European countries especially, are very popular. So anyway, thanks again, Studer, for being a partner, and you can check it out yourself at axxiaaudio.com. We'll have that press release up, and you can visit the site, of course, anytime. All right, let's move ahead, and let's – yes, sir.
Can you sell an Omni 11 to FEMA?
I don't know if that would help. They're pushing audio through phone lines, and let's do a thought experiment here. Would today's experiment have gone any better if the phone company had not been broken up? If it was all AT&T in the U.S., would today's have gone any better?
Probably not.
Debatable,
yeah. Okay. I don't think the breakup has much to do with it. I think it's more of just the way it's being implemented. The phone systems haven't gotten worse. And if you're running, you know, SIP trunks for VoIP phones at your business or, you know, wherever you may be relaying, you have actually a better chance of better quality audio with most of the VoIP stuff that's out there anyway. I agree with Tom. It's debatable. As much as I'd like to say, yeah, it had something to do with it, I don't think so.
And if the problem turns out to be an EAS encoder somewhere or a decoder somewhere that had been overdriven and leveled due to a design deficiency in that product, then of course Ma Bell wouldn't have made any difference in that, right?
Well, yeah, but bear in mind the manufacturers of this equipment. You know, it comes down to the cost of manufacturing, the price point. I remember early on in the early days of when the went from EBS to EAS and all the tests and regular, what do you call it, the referendums that were going out through the FCC and what was needed, how it's going to be done, the costs. And all the manufacturers are saying, in order to make it, feasible for people to buy, they had to make sure they went with the least common denominator in many things. And I've worked with all the boxes that are out there. And you know what? If you're not, that aware of how to do audio in and out of a box and understand the measuring and get the levels right, you can easily overdrive these guys because they had to make it as simple, as cost-effective as possible. And I can say that that's probably a contributing factor. The boxes do work. They work very well when you have them set up properly.
Yeah.
And, but it's just that's the way the industry pushed it, which goes back to what I was saying. EAS needs to be treated more like a program element than just something that's required by law, because that's just the way it is. And it's going to be the redheaded stepchild no matter what we do.
So what about this this cap system that stations were supposed to have implemented by about now, but the deadline got moved a bit farther up? Plenty of engineers said, if you can't implement cap by now, you don't deserve to be a broadcaster. And I'm pretty sure that my radio stations haven't bought the gear yet. We will before we before the deadline. Okay, so how would what is cap? Tom, you want to jump here and help us understand this? What is cap, and how would it have made things better for today's test?
Well, CAP, the Common Alerting Protocol, it's a digital method delivered over internet or in the state of New Jersey. It's delivered by satellite and the internet, so there's a backup path. And what it does is if an EAS message goes out, the first thing it can do is it can actually trigger your box to send the EAS message, but you get a much more detailed, because you're dealing with internet data, you're dealing with a heck of a lot more data capacity than what you can transmit in your audio stream on the air. You can actually get a complete text message. You can get a complete page of text that'll tell you exactly what's going on, where it's going on. If I'm not mistaken, at some point they're actually expecting to be able to take this thing pretty much down to your home address. So, if the gas main has a problem in front of your house, they can say, 123 Main Street, 125 Main Street, 127 Main Street, run like hell. But what they can also do is they can also push the audio, because this is all it is. It's an XML file. They can push an MP3 file with it. And what happens is the audio shows up in your box as an MP3 file. And bang, the box takes off and does its thing. You've got a clean message. You've got a more detailed message. So in the case of something, an emergency alert, an emergency action notification message, that's a required must carry, do it, end of report or else. But something like a tornado alert, or maybe there's there's an overturned truck with a chemical spill, you can actually get the whole text and read it and see what it is before you say, yeah, I'm going to carry this, or, it's important but not that important. Where the present system, you get a little piece of paper about that big. It's only... It's very similar to a Twitter message. I don't know if it's 140 characters or what the actual character count is. You don't get much information in that, and that has to include the counties, the state, the what the alert is. It's a civil message. It's a tornado warning. It's a severe thunderstorm warning. It's an emergency action notification. But they can't put a heck of a lot of detailed information in there. All you know is it's a tornado warning for Somerset County, New Jersey. I think I better carry it. They can't say that one has actually been seen on Main Street in Somerset County, New Jersey. So Main Street, you better evacuate or take shelter immediately. and it's moving in the easterly direction towards East Main Street and East Main Street and Sesame Street. So, you know, everybody take shelter. All you know is that tornado has touched down in Somerset. So you transmit, you know, everybody take shelter in Somerset. So it will allow you to get a lot more detailed and give you a lot more detailed information, and also deliver it by various other means, which aren't on the air. So it will allow you to actually do the alert, you know, the audible alert that somebody listening to your station would hear. But it's all delivered in a digital format, either over the internet or over a satellite link or however it's specified by the state. The main problem with a lot of the CAP stuff is a lot of the state EAS plans were not in effect, and some of them still aren't in effect to accommodate the newer system. And many of the states, because these CAP servers are actually run on the state level, many of the states don't have their CAP servers in place yet. Whether it's funding, whether it's, gee, do we really have to do this right now? Whether it's, gee, we want to put it in, but we don't have the expertise to do it. Or whether the feds haven't given them any guidance yet. I don't know what the story is, but many states don't have the CAP servers in. New York is experimenting right now, but it's not a real system.
What about security on EAS? What about security on this CAP system? Is there any encryption going on? Is there any way for a hacker to fake something, to get something on the air that's not real?
I believe there is encryption. I believe there's some safety method. I haven't really studied the CAP protocol close enough to see, but I if a hacker wants to get in, they're going to do it. No matter what it is. And basically, the way the thing works is the box at WOR says, hey, CAP server, you got anything for me? No. Hey, CAP server, you got anything for me? No. Hey, CAP server, you got anything for me? Oh, yeah, here's a message. Boom, sends it over. So there's some type of handshaking going on. So they know who each other is. Now, whether it can be hacked, anything can be hacked if you're good enough. You know, it remains to be seen right now as to how it's going to work and actually how secure it is. But I would hope that it was thought through a little, you know, somewhat thoroughly to try to make it pretty hard to hack into.
Chris, you got thoughts about this, about security or hacking in any of this? And how much does it matter?
It matters a lot, actually. You know, we had a meeting with FEMA a while back with Tom and I were at, and it was one of the questions I had presented to them. And they indicated, but not in much detail, that there was going to be some type of security. But I haven't found too much of the detail in that either in the documents that are available for the CAP protocol. So I'm not sure where their heads are at on that. But, you know, the whole system, in order for it, again, in my opinion, and again, it's just an opinion, and I've worked with a lot of, you know, local emergency operations folks over the years, if you're involving people's lives, whatever it is you're doing, whether it's fire safety, policing, you know, emergency medical technicians, you need to make sure that the system you're putting in place is as robust or as reliable as it needs to be for what you're trying to accomplish. So CAP, okay. if CAP was in effect today, there's a good chance we probably would have had a very decent audio quality, things probably would have went, much different. It's hard to say because, you know, it doesn't have it operating. But the whole system needs to be looked at from that standpoint. You know, if you're going to do CAP and it opens up a whole new door and you've got all this more information, as Tom pointed out, the current system has a small, 3-inch wide piece of paper coming out of a printer that's similar to what you see at a credit card machine at your point of sale in a retail outlet. You're limited by what you can do with that. CAP allows the broadcasters to take a look. Okay, that particular weather alert is important, but not in the sense that we have to suddenly drop everything and make the announcement. We can, you know, see what's going on. But it has to be secure. It has to be in a system that, you know, it's not 100% secure. There's nothing that, as Tom pointed, you can't make it 100%, but, you know, 5-9, something that we're accustomed to, something we know, okay, it's reliable enough. And, you know, it all goes back to, you know, what are we as broadcasters looking to do with this system? Are we trying to be serious with this, or is this just some you know, we're just placating the rules. And I just, I don't know, because working at stations that have to do this EAS for the last several years and all the stuff that Tom and I participated in here in New York City, you know, the seriousness of what is involved and watching how the New York City OEM folks handle all their other emergency needs, EAS, I sometimes, I think, falls a little short of that. And, you know, that's what's important. And just as you point out with your stations, you know, rural stations, people that are probably not in the best locations, I shouldn't say best location, in locations that are not the best for this type of delivery method we're currently using, are being underserved. You know, it's, that's, that shouldn't be. We need to look at it from all points.
On the one hand, I would estimate that, okay, the stations that that I'm part of are in Clarksdale, Mississippi, in Cleveland, Mississippi, in Greenville, in Mississippi, in Indianola, Mississippi. Okay, pretty rural areas. And I mean, if you took everybody in the coverage map of all these stations, you might have a 250,000 people. And of course, they're not all listening to us. You know, we got some small percentage. But here's my point. While EAS so far hasn't worked very well for those stations, I mean, I mentioned on a previous show we had a Mississippi dry cleaning emergency, right? Yeah, so they ran a statewide test, and the originating station didn't run the EOM end of message, and we had a dry cleaning ad. You know, went statewide. Well, I'm glad if we have a dry cleaning emergency, we're prepared. But here's my point: even if something like the EAN, if the president needed to get on the air or somebody at FEMA needed to get on the air and tell us all about some impending doom or what we can do to protect ourselves, I got to tell you, these my stations in Mississippi, we have somebody there. We have somebody, even in the middle of the night at 2 a.m. when the stations are unattended, there's somebody that lives 5 minutes away. They're going to have an EAS or a weather radio, and they're going to get to the station, and they're going to put CBS or Fox News on the air. Whatever's coming down their channels is just going to get put right on our air. And so whatever that audio is, and for coming from a national network, it's going to be good coverage of what's happening. Assuming the satellite didn't get knocked out of the sky, assuming that kind of thing. Other than that, you know, I mean, as broadcasters, what do we have a responsibility to build systems that are rock solid, bulletproof, no matter what? In Cleveland, Mississippi, in Pongo Pongo, American Samoa, in New York City, as broadcasters, you know, what's our whether or not whatever is our legal responsibility, what's our ethical responsibility to our listeners? I think that in large measure, broadcasters uphold their ethical responsibility to let folks know what's going on. Pilots generally want to get their planes on the ground safely. Broadcasters are people too. We got families, and we want to make sure that we know something, and we feel that it's our responsibility to tell other folks what's going on. I don't know. I'm kind of rambling here, but I guess the point I'm trying to make is this: that most broadcasters are going to get something on the air about local, state, national emergencies, whether or not there's an EAS. Now, a question may come up: how are we first alerted to it? And I get that. And EAS could be really good for first alerting us of something. So maybe, just maybe, EAS should be reduced to a data-only system. I mean, if audio is going to be as bad as it was today, and, you know, could it be better? In practical terms, would it be better? I don't know. But if we can certainly, we have lots of methods to get data around. And if it's on-air duck farts backed up by CAP or CAP backed up by on-air duck farts, and the same kind of CAP data coming through satellite systems that are always connected, would that be enough? Would that kind of alerting system be adequate for local, state, and national emergencies where we need to get information out? Thoughts on that, Tom?
It could be. The problem is, though, at a lot of stations, especially in smaller markets, you don't have somebody sitting there at the radio station 24/7. So if you don't have that audio component, what message goes out? Because there's nobody there to read it. So and there's nobody there to take the network to air. So now you just added a level of complexity onto the automation system to force it to go to some emergency channel someplace to carry the audio. I don't know what the answer is. I mean, a number of years ago when we went through deregulation, which allowed us to go with automated station operation. The cat's out of the bag, and Pandora's box is open. You can't really take it, and you could try to take it away, but the stations are going to scream bloody murder because, let's face it, having a body there costs money. If you're in a smaller market, chances are you don't have the money to spend, and it's kind of a catch-22. So I think the audio component has to be there, but there are probably better ways to do it. And something like CAP, which can deliver the audio in an MP3 file format and digital format, that might be part of the solution.
Hmm. Chris, what do you think? It just feels like we're stuck in this rut called EAS that, well, even if it works well, doesn't have a chance of working as well as we would like it to, or as well as broadcasters could do by some other method and individual efforts.
Well, how about maybe just rethinking the rulings on how EAS is to be implemented to accommodate the changing marketplace that we are in? As Tom pointed out, a lot of stations are unattended. Deregulation offered opportunities for broadcasters, and in many cases, it's a financial decision, and that's the marketplace dictating policy. So maybe what we need to rethink is, if you're a radio station or television station and you want to participate in the EAS, then you'll do what's necessary to participate. But if you choose not to, then you shouldn't be penalized. The ruling is, if you don't participate, you need to stop broadcasting. Well, Quite frankly, as Kirk, you pointed out, if your radio station isn't the source of news and information for the community, they're not going to go to you first when, say, the weather changes and a hurricane appears to be coming because the conditions are just right. They're not tuning into your station. They're probably tuning into the local news operation, whether it's be television or radio. So why penalize a broadcaster for not participating because it doesn't make sense? The market is dictating what they're going to do. And this is what we need to look at and say, okay. And then if you do want to participate, maybe there's a different level of participation. My station's unattended. I don't have the ability to just suddenly drop everything and insert your audio without, vetting it. I should not be forced to put, the National Weather Service on the air without any thought to what's going on. As Tom and I have experienced over the years, you can easily have, 6 or 7 alerts in a row from the National Weather Service for stuff that, quite frankly, you don't need to alert the community in the way that EAS does.
Oh, Chris, where I live, I live at a junction of 5 counties, and there's one station up here that's on automatic relay for National Weather Service. In the summer, when you get a thunderstorm, you get a lot of thunderstorms in the summertime, you get an alert when the storm goes through county number 1. 2 minutes later, you get an alert when the storm goes through county number 2. By the time it hits the 3rd county, you're sitting there going, all right, already, it's going to rain. Hello? And now you've lost the public.
Yeah, well, that's the point I'm making. It's like, we need to be more realistic on the rulings. It's just like, in a civilization where you have motor vehicles, or motor coaches, and you have traffic signals. There's a law, there's a rule. We all agree to red means stop, yellow means proceed with caution, green is go. But, you can bend the rules, and there's ways around. There's things we have right on red and, things of that sort. Flashing red means you stop, look all ways, and then proceed. Maybe we need to look at the EAS rulings and say, what if? Or how about maybe, yes, radio station's unattended. They only have somebody in once a week. They do comply with all the other rules that are required. Maybe we have a subset of EAS, like a turn on red type of thing for these stations, whether it be TV or radio. And that's what needs to be addressed, is along with, primary entry points and connectivity. Do we use satellite? Do we use IP over DSL or cable modem or a point-to-point microwave? Who knows? Those methods, that's like, it's black and white. That's like a mathematical formula. It's a given. We need to really think about the workflow, the signal flow. What is it we were trying to accomplish? Now, that would help you, Kirk, with your stations if we had a right on red for EAS for your station that's, say, unattended or has one person there but maybe busy doing other things at the time of a crisis and may not be qualified to read the paperwork and go, maybe this is important, maybe it's not. I'm not sure what to do. That, just again, my opinion. I'm thinking out loud.
There's a lot of folks in the chat room asking about cell phone distribution of such messages, and unfortunately we are going to have to put that idea on hold and maybe bring in somebody who'd be expert at talking to us about that. What could the cell phone companies do in this kind of environment of getting emergency messages out? Hey, we all know that not everybody's listening to radio, not everybody's watching TV, and even though some folks may be listening to audio, it may not be from a radio broadcaster. It may be from the internet, and how are you going to interrupt that? And that's not so likely. Also from the chat room, somebody said, the way that most folks are going to find out about something happening, it's going to be their friends saying, "Did you hear about?" And that's how so much news gets disseminated. Whether it's Tiger Woods in trouble, or whether it's the latest political foible of the latest candidate, or the latest thing going on with an Occupy Wall Street crowd, it's so often it's, "Did you hear about?" Of course, the person who heard about it, may have seen it on, right, who knows, Google News, or heard it on the radio, or may have a news pop up on their cell phone. So many things so many ways to disseminate information. And since the good thing is we have so many choices, the bad news about that is you don't have one single avenue into everybody's home. The Kardashians. Another example.
All the more reason you have to consider the other options. And the cell phone is definitely an option that's to be considered. You opt in. These are people that opt in. If they opt in, then they'll get an alert. But yeah, I'm trying to say, don't look at it just from a point of view as broadcasters, as we tend to do lately. You got to look at it. So look at this network. You can get this programming of this network on many platforms. We'll call it platforms. Many outlets. Why? Because that's the way it works. That's how we serve the audience that we have. Our niche audience knows where to find it. It meets their needs, their personal way of ingesting or consuming the content. Radio and TV need to think the same way. Their audiences are using smartphones, Blackberries, whatever you want to call them. And that's part of what we have to understand and look at these rules and say, hey, how do we get the message out and just hope that it reaches where it has to, whether it's somebody listening on the table radio in the kitchen or their cell phone in their pocket on a bus across town or in the park. It doesn't matter. The point is, how do we get it out there? And, where they're getting the information is reliable, credible. And that's the way to look at it.
I think if we just put up signs at every Starbucks and Chipotle, we'd probably get the word out pretty quickly.
Oh, yeah.
Guys, we got to draw the show to a close. We're going to give away an Omnia AXE. So I need a number between 1 and 21. Tom Ray, think of me a number between 1 and 21.
Seven.
All right, hang on. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Oh my gosh, 6, 7. Oh, geez. Yeah, uh-oh. He's going to be happy.
Chris Tobin?
He's
the guy that thinks Chris was always.
Chris, have you been entering the contest? No, the winner here is he's been trying every week for the longest time, and I've been watching his name pass by every time I count right by him. This time, 7 was it. It is I don't know his name. His Twitter handle is Bogo Interactive. So sometimes a controversial creature. Bogo Interactive of Lincoln, Nebraska, you have won an Omnia AXE, and I think maybe you're following me. He's at theworldofbogo.com. All right, fine. Omni AXE is software that lets you process audio and make a stream. AAC, HEAAC V2 or MP3, any of those you like. You can make a number of streams. And anyway, it runs on your Windows PC. It runs as a service, so it's pretty darn reliable. And it's free to Bogo Interactive. The rest of you, it costs about $400. So thanks a lot for playing the game. I appreciate you retweeting about the This Week in Radio Tech show. Guys, we got to wrap it up. So, hey, Chris Tobin, the best dressed engineer in radio, thank you for being with us and contributing to today's show.
You're welcome. And just remember, everything I talked about was just my opinion, not those of my employer or anybody else.
I'm just glad you're still employed. Chris Tarr wasn't with us this evening. He was busy with some big wigs, some suits. Tom Ray, thank you for being with us from the Hudson Valley of New York.
The opinions expressed on this program are those of Kirk Harnack and his guests and do not necessarily represent the views of the ownership or management of the people we work for or the Twit Network. No. Thanks, Kirk. It's always been fun, and as fun as always. It's enjoyable, and have yourself a great week.
All that's very true. And I want to remind everyone that I promise one week coming up, not necessarily one week from now, but some week in the near future, we're going to have as a guest Bob Orban. And I know a lot of you are looking forward to hearing from Bob Orban. He'll be a guest on the Triangulation Show before our show. At least this is the plan. And then he'll be a guest on This Week in Radio Tech. So I would be very much looking forward to having Bob Orban. Discovered and invented many great things regarding FM audio processing and AM processing, too, on our show. We've had a friend of his, Greg Oganowski, on the show. I'd like to have Greg back, too. So, hey, in the coming weeks, we do have more guests coming up. So hope you'll stay tuned for that. Thanks for joining us. We're going to see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye.